He was born a long, long time ago. Of a family no one would especially recognize in a rural backwater in the southern part of his land. He grew up unnoticed in many ways. And yet, as he grew older and reached young adulthood, he began to gain notoriety. In fact, the places that he went and the things that he did caused people to notice and even to say at times that he was a wonder worker. For a time, he worked in the north, going small community to small community, and more people knew who he was and gathered to see him. People one might not expect to gather, for indeed he was a descendant of peoples who had been enslaved in a land far from their own homeland, who had been freed through the miraculous work of a spirit and human beings. And yet all kinds of folks gathered to see him. After a while in the north, he went to the south, to the great city, where he also encountered great crowds of people. He died too young, but is remembered not by thousands, but by millions, who every spring, on a glorious day, gather together wearing their special garments and remember and celebrate him. His symbol is known everywhere. It's found in shrines and monuments. People wear it on jewelry. Of course, by now, you all know that I've been speaking of Jackie Robinson. On April 15th this year, as has been the case for many, many years, we will recall that Jackie Robinson was the first African-American professional baseball player in the National League. We'll remember his great career. We'll remember the ways in which he was reviled and ridiculed, the ways in which he was able somehow not to act out in violence. We'll remember that he was the first. Now, I want you to imagine something with me now. Imagine that Jackie Robinson had been the first African-American baseball player in the National League. He had played his seasons for the Brooklyn Dodgers. And after he had played his first game, no other African-American players ever played Major League Baseball. What would the number 42 mean to you today? Would there be statues? Would there be museums? Would there be remembrances? Every once in a while, people who write almanacs and people who are too smart about baseball for their own good would say, you know, one time just after the war, one of those African-American fellas was on the Brooklyn Dodgers. But he wasn't the only, was he? He was the first. And because of what happened with Jackie Robinson, just a few weeks later, in fact, the second African-American ball player began to play. The American League became integrated, and soon, it wasn't more than a year or two, more and more wonderfully talented African-Americans were playing side by side with wonderfully talented European-Americans. And today, when you watch a ball game, even if you're a Cardinals fan, or if you watch a real ball game in Wrigley Field, you will see faces that are brown and pink and darker and lighter. Faces of people who speak lots of different home languages. Faces of people who excel at baseball, some more than others, admittedly. But because Jackie Robinson was the first, now there are others, and it's fair to say, at least for baseball fans, the world was different before Jackie Robinson than it is after Jackie Robinson. An era ended and a new era began. But enough about Jackie Robinson. I want to talk about another guy today. Also, as you might suppose, born in a small town in the south of his land, etc., etc., etc. The book of Revelation reminds us of who Jesus was and who Jesus is and who Jesus is coming to be. In fact, Revelation does it with some strange grammar. I loved what Bob Rose did this morning with the letter B, right? Be here then, I'll be here now, I'll be here when the time comes, etc. Because the book of Revelation actually does that. There's some really weird Greek grammar at the beginning of the book of Revelation. What is said about God in the beginning of the book of Revelation is God is the is. The is. That's what God is called in Greek. You don't see it anywhere else except for the book of Revelation. God is the was. And the coming one. The is, the was, and the coming one. This is God. And Jesus is put together in that way. I am the Alpha and the Omega. The beginning and the end. And we hear in this beginning of this book that's often really crazy. And get ready, we're going to do 4 weeks of Revelation. It comes up in the lectionary only every 3 years like this. And we're going to embrace it. The Alpha. The Omega, the beginning and the end, the firstborn of the dead. Jesus was the first. The first. Jesus' early followers affirmed in Jesus' resurrection that an old age had ended and a new age had begun. Jesus' early followers affirmed that in the new life from God that Jesus represented, all of the things of the past era were slipping away, and all of the wonders of a new age were coming to be. You see, there are different ways that we could look at the story of Jesus. We could remember that a long time ago, something happened with some guy in some place who died on a cross and reportedly rose again. People who know way too much for their own good about religious stuff and Greek and Hebrew and all of that might every once in a while say, "Oh, yeah. I could tell you that story." People who write almanacs might look back and say, "Yeah, that was an odd case, the case of Jesus." But for the fact that Jesus wasn't the only, Revelation tells us, but that he was the first. The firstborn of the dead. Revelation is written, the earliest books of the New Testament were written with an expectation that with Jesus' resurrection, God was doing something new and incredible and wonderful, and that it affected the lives of the people who followed him and the people who proclaimed the resurrection. Today, as followers of Jesus, we are called to proclaim precisely the same thing. Not that something happened long ago, but it's over now, and I wonder what it was like. But that he was the first, and that we participate in the new life that God showed the world through Jesus Christ. Now, I'm not saying that that means that each of us, when we die, can be expected to be seen again 3 days later by our friends and acquaintances, and that we will walk along a road and share a meal with them in our favorite way. But I am saying, that resurrection faith is not just faith that one time God raised one person, Jesus. Resurrection faith is that through Jesus Christ, the world changed. We now live in an era of resurrection because of what God did through Jesus Christ. We can know new life. We can participate in new life. British New Testament professor Christopher Evans tells it this way. talking about the ways in which Paul understood resurrection, not as a means to a further end, Evans says, a new and permanent form of existence characterized by the relationship expressed in the words with Christ. This is how the Apostle Paul talked about our relationship with Christ. The preposition with, Evans says, marks for Paul the parallelism between the career of Christ and that of the Christian who co-suffers, co-dies, is con-crucified and co-buried with Christ. We celebrate that in our baptism. Is raised with him, is conformed to him, and made to sit with him as co-heir, co-ruler, and is con-glorified with him. Resurrection is a mark of our Christian life together. When the book of Revelation tells us that Jesus is the firstborn of the dead, the book of Revelation is saying to us, mark carefully, readers, listen up, hearers. This is not a story about something that happened a long time ago that has nothing to do with you today. This is a story about something that happened, that is happening, and that will continue to happen. God, a powerful, loving, gracious God, has entered into the world for newness of life in Jesus Christ. And that's as true today as it was over 2,000 years ago. It will be as true tomorrow as it is today. What does that mean for us? It means that things can be different for us now because of what happened with the resurrection of Jesus then. We can, with faith and assurance that God has power for life, that God is the presence of hope, that God is a God of grace, move forward into the world where hatred and sin and oppression still seem to run rife. And even in the midst of those things, we can say to ourselves, we know that a new age has begun. We know that things are different than they used to be. And we know that it's because of what God has done in Jesus Christ. Our lives are changed because of the resurrection. Back to Jackie Robinson for a minute. As wonderful as the story is, it's been made into movies, books, radio programs, posters, catalogs, almanacs, etc., etc., etc. As wonderful as the story of the integration of Major League Baseball is, as wonderful as the story of the life of Jackie Robinson is, as wonderful as those plays he made at second base and at other positions as well, and the bases he stole and the hits he made, it didn't end discrimination in baseball or anywhere else. Today, even in the midst of those baseball teams where there are people with differently toned faces and different home languages, there are still people who are saying to themselves, I sure wish we could go back to the good old days when it wasn't like this. There are still people who bring hate with them to sporting events. There are still people who discriminate quietly and out loud. As much of a wonder, a feat, a miracle, a game changer as Jesus' resurrection is, there are still people in this world who will not affirm it, who cannot abide it, and will not believe it. So what do we do? What do we do in a world where the age has changed, a new era has begun, the first has occurred? We make a choice. We believe in the power of that new era, and we link arms with others, and we look to God with hope. And we work and we act together. The book of Revelation was written to folks during wartime, folks who knew death, folks who knew destruction, folks who knew fear, folks who knew famine. And it was written to say, don't worry, things are going to be better because God is a powerful God. The old age has ended, the new age has begun because Jesus Christ is risen. There are those around who don't like that idea. There are those around who don't care about that idea. But, says John as he relates his vision, you're not those people. Christ is in your midst. You are the body of the resurrected Christ. You are the people who respond to God's love. You are the ones who are redeemed. You have reason for hope. Easter is a day. Last Sunday was Easter Sunday. But Easter is also liturgically a season, albeit fairly short. We're in the midst of the Easter season right now. I would also say that Easter is a way of being. The church is called to live as a resurrection body. The church is called to live as evidence of new life in Jesus Christ. The church is called to live as participants in a new age, even though some in the world are fighting to keep the old age alive. We are the bearers of resurrection truth. We are the bearers of resurrection life. And when we act for love, for justice, for grace, and for an end to oppression in the world, we are living out the resurrection promise we know in Jesus Christ. That's incredibly powerful. That's why every year, on one glorious day in the spring, we put on our special garments. That's why wherever you go, you will find the symbol of Jesus' life and death and new life enshrined in monuments, in movies, in books, in almanacs, pictures and calendars, etc., etc. That's why it matters to us. Not that he was the only, not that it was about history only, but that he was the first. God is doing a new thing. God is doing that new thing with God's power for life through Jesus Christ in, with, for, and because of us gathered in this place, breaking this bread, sharing this cup. And for that, people of God, I give thanks. Amen.